Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, we all know that our nation is in trouble. Without a doubt, it's divided. The enemy is within the gate trying to collapse our current administration and to destroy our Constitution. But when we learn that less than, get this, 4% of millennials hold a biblical worldview so necessary to supporting a constitutional republic here in the United States, the concern, in many regards, is even greater. So today on Stand in the Gap Today, we're going to be talking with George Barna about the latest research released this week on core values of millennials and its impact on our nation. And we're going to conclude on the program today with solutions to this dilemma. And I think you're going to find today's program to be insightful and practical, and I'd encourage you, call your friends and others or text them and invite them to be on the program today. The issue of millennials and millennial values is a paramount issue in the country. The data today will help to focus exactly where the problems are and where the opportunities are as well. And with that, I welcome you to Stand in a Gap Today. I'm Sam Rohr, and I'll be joined by Dave Kistler and millennial pastor Isaac Crockett, who is filling in for Gary Dahl today, who is away. So Isaac and Dave, I welcome you to the program, and glad we can all be together here as a kind of a new team here today. Isaac, glad to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. And Dave, always, it's good to be together again. We've got a lot to go over. Before we get into the meat of the program today, about talking about George Barna's latest research as developed by his American Culture and Faith Institute, I'd like to focus just briefly on the announcement from yesterday that President Trump's travel ban has once again been put on hold by a judge from Hawaii and then seconded by another one from Maryland. Let me play just a short piece of a clip as it was announced on CNN last night with one particular comment that they played from then-candidate Donald Trump. So, Russ, if you could play that for us here quickly, please.
We begin, though, with this hour with breaking news and a lot of it tonight. Just hours before the president's new revised travel ban was set to take effect, one of three federal judges hearing challenges to it put the executive order for now on ice. Quoting from the ruling, quote, "The record before this court is unique. It includes significant and unrebutted evidence of religious animus." Now, among the evidence cited, the interview in March of last year this program did with then-candidate Donald Trump. Here's part of that interview that the ruling itself cites.
I think Islam hates us, but there is a tremendous hatred, and we have to be very vigilant, we have to be very careful, and we can't allow people coming into this country who have this hatred of the United States.
I guess the question is,
and of people that are not Muslim.
I guess the question is there war between the West and radical Islam, or is there war between the West and Islam?
It's radical, but it's very hard to define. It's very hard to separate because you don't know who's who.
So the court cited that interview also.
Okay, Dave, let me go to you first on this. You heard the president's statement. The judge, in effect, stated that the president's order, which is, again, now the second time around, to limit immigration, to increase vetting on individuals primarily coming from a half a dozen major Muslim countries. The judge is saying this was unlawful, but effectively he was saying, because he was saying, he didn't say this, but he's actually saying that it was almost like religious discrimination, since the president said, quote, "I think Islam hates us. There is a tremendous hatred and we have to be very careful," end quote. Dave, do you see a problem with what the president said? Sam, I do not. It's not religious discrimination. We can call it an ideological discrimination. And by the way, we have to discriminate ideologically. And the problem with Islam is it's not just a religion. It has religious elements, but it is more ideology than it is religion. It has a judicial component. It has a legal component. It's called Sharia law. And Sam, anybody that knows anything about Islamic ideology knows that that is antithetical to our United States Constitution. And by the way, we have had numerous former Muslims on this program, and Sam, there is not a one of them that would say that Islam can be reformed. There's not a one of them that would say that Islam is compatible with our U.S. Constitution, because it is not. And so do I have a problem with what the president said? I do not, Sam, not at all. And until we admit what Islam is and the danger it poses to the United States, we're never going to be able to appropriately deal with it. One last comment I want to make. Name for me the Islamic country, the country that has become wholly Islamic, that tolerates any other religious belief. There is no nation that does that. So, Sam, we have a problem. And I thank God that our president sees it. He's trying to navigate through this and, you know, be careful in what he says. But he understands the problem, as he well should.
Isaac, let me go to you, because I think what Dave said there is right spot on. And obviously we talk a lot about Islam on the program, and it's because it keeps coming up in the news. The embedded nature of the Muslim Brotherhood throughout all these different areas keeps bringing it back up, and that's what this is. So let me come to you here and ask you this question. You're not a lawyer or a judge. I know that. You're a pastor who's responsible to teach your people about how to evaluate such matters as immigration policy. When you, Isaac, balance the constitutional duty of the president to keep our citizens safe with the biblical duty of the government to enact justice and to protect the innocent, what's the judge missing in his rationale for placing the president's executive order here in the balance? What is he missing, and what can you bring to bear? For instance, maybe I could rephrase it. If somebody in your congregation came to you, Isaac, and said, something doesn't smell right here, Pastor,
right,
tell us,
yeah,
what would you tell him?
Well, my grandfather actually was a lawyer. After graduating from William & Mary, he practiced in Atlanta during segregation in the Deep South. And because he, as a white lawyer, often represented black clients, there were judges who held that against him, that didn't like him personally because of that. And he used to tell very colorful stories of ways he had to work around it. And he was so ticked off, so frustrated, because a judge is supposed to be impartial. A judge, by the Constitution and the very nature of his or her position, is only supposed to evaluate the facts, and just the facts, not personality, not politics. And I believe that this judge in Hawaii, I believe the judge in Maryland, the judge in Washington State, that they are activist judges, and that they are not even attempting to evaluate the Constitution. They're not attempting to evaluate the facts, the ruling. They're overstepping their constitutional boundaries, and they're starting what has become a horrible and, I think, just ridiculous precedent that seeks to take the protection of our country that is given to the president and place it now in the court of political correctness and the court of public opinion. And they are not supposed to judge what they feel is the motivation of the president, but just the facts of the ruling.
Well, I tell you, excellent, excellent, Isaac. I think that is great. You're basically saying the judge is improper in what they're doing because they're trying to make policy rather than to evaluate the straight up portion of what the president is saying. I think that's a great, great point that you made. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to come back now. We're going to welcome after the break George Barna, and we're going to get right into the matter of worldview, because effectively what we're just talking about is a worldview. We're going to talk about it, though, as it relates to millennials and the impending danger when only 19 of 20 millennials hold a biblical worldview.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teacher's Editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
He was called the chief architect of the Constitution and wrote many of the Federalist Papers, which were instrumental in the states ratifying the Constitution. He introduced the Bill of Rights in the first session of Congress. As president, he and his wife Dolly had to flee the White House when the British set it on fire during the War of 1812. Who was he? James Madison, born this day, March 16, 1751. James Madison wrote, "Before any man can be considered a member of civil society, he must first be considered a subject of the governor of the universe."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Tune in from 7 to 8 a.m. every Friday morning to hear Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitutional Leadership Initiative, Phil Duffy, Constitutional Law Instructor at Widener University, Pastor David Whitney, Senior Instructor at the Institute on the Constitution, and their guests every Friday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. as they explore and help us understand the Constitution, not only as our foundational document, but also as it relates to our lives today, right here on 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
If you're just listening to Stand in the Gap Today for the first time, or if you're a regular listener, we thank you for being with us today. Every other Thursday, as much as possible, we have a returning guest, George Barna. He's the Executive Director of American Culture and Faith Institute. And on this program, we're glad to work with him and the Institute in unveiling and discussing weekly research that the Institute does. And with that, today is that day. And so I want to welcome you again to the program today, George. Thanks for being on with us.
Well, it's great to be with you again, Sam.
George, we just want to say publicly for all of those around the country here listening, we appreciate what you do, what you have done, and the role that I believe that you are playing with the American Culture and Faith Institute in helping to provide research and data that helps to frame the narrative of what ought to be in the real identifying the needs that exist in this country. And certainly this whole area of millennials, biblical worldview is something that has really been astounding. And with that, I just want to touch on this one point, and then I want to ask you to go in and give us the highlights of this week's research. But one of the things in here, which I started the program with, is by saying that your research is indicating that biblical worldview of Americans generally, and of Christians generally, and the nation as a whole specifically, I guess, is in really bad shape, with a very small percentage of millennials, 19 of 20, who do not hold a biblical worldview. The applications, implications of this are enormous. That's all I'm going to say at this point, because you take this research and you've built off of it. Start us off today by giving us the highlights and what you would want us to have as the takeaway from this week's really dynamic research.
Yeah, I know you're not a statistics guy, Sam, so let me just point out that it's even worse than you said. You said 19 out of 20 millennials don't have a biblical worldview. It's actually 24 out of 25. But be that as it may, I mean, the point is that across the country, only 10% of American adults have a biblical worldview. And it gets lower. You know, when you look at millennials, we're talking about only 4% who have such a worldview. Now, what difference does that make? I mean, realize that in order to get to that number, we asked 40 different questions about people's beliefs and behaviors, looked at it in a number of different ways, including generationally. We found that on beliefs, millennials are less likely to have biblical beliefs than are other adults in America, older adults in America, for 19 of those 20 beliefs. They're less likely to have biblical behaviors than people from those other generations, than other older adults on 14 of those 20 behaviors that we looked at. And to give you an idea of what that looks like in practicality, you know, in terms of people saying that they're Christians, doesn't mean they are, but I mean at least embracing that label, 72% of adults over the age of 30 call themselves Christians, only 59% of millennials. People who say that they're either atheist or agnostic or they have no religious affiliations or beliefs whatsoever, 18% of people 30 or older, more than that, 28% among the millennials. You look at the proportion who are born-again Christians, not because that's what they call themselves, but because they say after they die they know they'll go to heaven, but only because they've confessed their sins and have accepted Christ as their Savior. That's 33% of adults who are 30 or older, only 20% of adults under 30. We look at support for same-sex marriage. Millennials are about 50% higher on that. We look at describing ourselves as either conservative or liberal. It's the mirror opposites between millennials and older adults. Millennials are more than twice as likely to describe themselves as liberal as compared to conservative. And when we look at people aligning themselves as being, part of the LGBT community, again, millennials very different, 2.5 times more likely than older adults. So there are huge differences between that particular generation and people who are 30 and older.
George, let me ask you if you could do something. We throw terminology around on this program, and sometimes I'm wondering if people really understand what we're referring to. Most, some do, maybe many do not. When you talk about the baby boomer generation, the builder generation, the buster generation, and the millennial generation, can you put ages with that so that people listening that may not be totally familiar with those terms will understand what age groups we're talking about?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the easier questions you'll probably ask me today. When we talk about baby boomers, let's take the two older generations in America today. Baby boomers currently are between the ages of 53 and 71, people born between 1946 and 1964. Builders, their parents' generation, those are individuals who are between the ages of 72 and 90. If you look at those two generations together, in other words, people in their 50s and older, essentially, what we know is combined, 16% of those generations have a biblical worldview. Then if we look at the baby bust generation, sometimes referred to as Gen X, That's a group that was born, from 1965 to 1983. Currently, they're between the ages of 34 and 52. So essentially, we're talking about a group that's in their 30s and 40s. That particular generation, only 7% have a biblical worldview. You can see where the boomers dropped the ball as parents. And then when we look at the millennials, our youngest adult generation, currently between the ages of 18 and 33, again, those in their late teens, in their 20s, just entering their 30s, the largest generation in America's history, and the lowest worldview of any generation that we've ever recorded at just 4%.
Wow. And George, this is Isaac. I fall into that category of, the younger group there. And, I see these numbers indicating that the generation coming in and filling in, it's actually a very big generation. They're only, slightly, 4% having this worldview that is biblical. How close do you think we are to being a completely secular culture here in our country? Or maybe we're already there. Is that kind of in the works? Is that the plan?
Yeah, I think we're moving toward that, although I frankly couldn't tell you any culture anywhere in the world at any time in history that was completely of one worldview. It's always a mixture, even though there are very few in certain cultures. You go to some of the Eastern, Far Eastern nations, not a whole lot of Christians in some of those countries, but there are some. So, we probably won't become a totally secular nation, but we are rapidly moving as close to that as you can get. We have a predominantly secular view today. I would say that the prevailing worldview in America is postmodernism, which says that your life is all about feelings and experiences and relationships. It says that there's no such thing as absolute moral truth. It says that you cannot know if there is a living God, but if you choose to believe in that, well, okay. And it says that really everything revolves around you. You are the center of your universe. You are the one who dictates what's right or wrong or meaningful or appropriate in your universe. So what we have in America is a situation where we've got fragments of biblical thinking and behavior that remain embedded in American culture, even though growing numbers of people don't know the genesis of those fragments. They don't know what the Bible teaches. They don't believe that the Bible is something they need to be aware of. And maybe the greatest indicator of where we are is one of the questions we had in our worldview survey that had to do with the whole notion of success. Because we asked people, what's the greatest indicator of whether or not you're a success in your life? And what we found was only 18%, less than one out of five adults in America, said that success had anything to do, was mostly to do with commitment and obedience to God. In other words, more than four out of five Americans say that success has to do with achievement or comfort or happiness or status, any of those other kinds of things that postmodernism and many other worldviews that are out there would say is really the reason for getting out of bed in the morning. So I think we're on the road to seeing a biblical worldview potentially become extinct in American society. We hope, pray, and we'll work to see that it doesn't, but that's the trend right now. And what makes that all the more possible is the fact that millennials are our primary parenting generation in America today. And as parents, you try to pass off your worldview to your children. But keep in mind, you can't get what you don't have. 24 out of 25 millennial parents do not have a biblical worldview. They will not be able to teach or display a biblical worldview to their children. So it's increasingly unlikely that the children of millennials, our prime parenting generation, are going to grow up with a biblical worldview.
And George, we're going to talk about that specifically in the next segment, but in about 20 seconds here, most people can look at America and think, and we often look to Europe. Are we tracking Europe? Do you have any way of comparing where Europe is as compared to where we are? Because obviously they're in a bit worse shape, but we're getting closer, it seems.
Yeah, there are a few researchers I work with over in Europe, and looking at the numbers that they're pulling from England, France, and beyond, I would say, yeah, that's kind of become the model, unfortunately, of what America in the future may be.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you are taking in this information. This is dangerous territory into which we have gotten in America. You cannot maintain freedom without a biblical worldview. And we're just about there being totally void of it. When we come back, we're going to stay with George Barnes. We're going to talk about the impacts of losing a biblical worldview. And we're going to talk about what do you do when you don't have enough parents who do know the truth to be able to teach it to their children. Stay with us. We'll be right back after these announcements.
Fox News Radio, I'm Chris Foster. President Trump has submitted his spending plan and writes on Twitter, a budget that puts America first must make safety its number one priority. The top House Democrat, Nancy Pelosi, says military strength is important, but
our strength depends on the power of our diplomacy, the health of our economy, and the vitality of our communities, all of which are undermined by the president's budget.
A Maryland federal judge joins one in Hawaii blocking the president's revised travel ban, ruling it's really a Muslim ban.
The decision to halt the policy will almost certainly be appealed, something the president alluded to during a campaign-style rally before thousands of supporters in Nashville.
I will not stop fighting for the safety of you and your families, believe me.
The administration will likely argue that the president has broad power over immigration.
Fox's John Decker, Fox News. We report, you decide.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. In both Washington and Harrisburg, there are efforts underway to try and defund Planned Parenthood, or at the very least, make sure tax dollars are directed to programs that actually provide an array of services that more fully help women. Just this past week, Planned Parenthood announced the closing of two clinics in Easton and Bristol. Now, that's great news, and that makes 11 Planned Parenthood clinics in Pennsylvania that have closed since 2013. Additional good news, there is a new federally funded health clinic that will open in Easton in place of the Planned Parenthood, and it will provide all the services that Planned Parenthood did and some others, but will not do abortions. Now, that's clearly a better use of tax dollars than giving it to Planned Parenthood, America's and Pennsylvania's number one seller of abortions. You can find out more about this story at our website at pafamily.org, or you can call us at 1-800-FAMILY-1. That's 1-800-FAMILY-1.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
If you're just joining us now on Stand in the Gap Today, we are glad that you're with us. We're spending time today with George Barna. Our subject is primarily the facts of biblical worldview and latest research that is strongly indicating that the younger our generations go, younger our age goes in this country, the less biblical worldview we have, and that portends very, very dangerous things for our country. And we're going to talk about solutions to that in the last segment, but a lot of our station, a lot of our listeners right now don't pick up the news at the bottom of the hour. We just listen to some Fox News. And Dave and George and Isaac, I just thought it was interesting. I noted Nancy Pelosi's response to the president's budget proposed cutting spending, and she says it attacks the strength of our communities, the health of our nation, and basically she went that direction on it because the president was talking about cutting funds. I just couldn't help but think she's got a biblical worldview or a worldview that is not at all related to what really needs to happen in America. She didn't mention nothing. She mentioned nothing about God or moral truth in any regard. And of course, that's part of our problem. But it just the application of our discussion today is so pertinent. George, let me go back to you now, right enough, and pick up on this. The impacts of losing a biblical worldview. You talked a little bit about on the other segment about as we approach younger parents, we are dealing with parents who have a less of a biblical worldview, and that becomes really troubling when, in fact, parents are perhaps the primary input or formers of biblical worldview. Why don't you share with us just a couple of facts that you could about worldview shaping? When does that happen, and who primarily is the shaper of biblical worldview in our children?
Yeah, Sam, I think those are really important questions. And one of the things that I've discovered over the years that people don't realize is that every individual's worldview begins forming at the age of about 18 months. And it continues to be developed until about the age of 13. Once we reach 13, our worldview is almost fully formed. We've been exposed to so much information and had so many experiences and had so many role models that we've observed closely that by that time we've determined what we think is right or wrong, what's good or bad, what's appropriate, inappropriate, what's meaningful and not meaningful. And so one of the things that I like to tell parents when I work with them is, you know, the worldview that you have at the age 13 is probably almost exactly the worldview you're going to die with whenever that occasion comes. And so getting to people when they are very young, when they are still children, is critical. As you mentioned, you know, parents have a major influence on the shaping of our worldviews. But we have to keep in mind, based on other research we've done on worldview development, that parents are not the only significant shaper of the worldview. We found that there are two others that have a huge influence. One of those is the media. I mean, you think about it, and it's estimated that by the time a child graduates from high school, they've been exposed to 16,000 hours of media content. That takes an enormous toll on their mind and their heart and their soul. The other major influencer of our worldviews is the law, civil law, the laws and policy that our governments put into practice. And a lot of people have the silly notion that you can't legislate morality. They don't understand that what morality means is what's right or wrong. And all the law does is tell us what's right or wrong. You do what's right, you continue to do. You do what's wrong, you get punished. Here are the penalties. And so the law also helps children and others to figure out what's moral. So those three things, parents, media, and government, have a huge impact on the development of who we become as human beings. Because we do what we believe. Our worldview is essentially our understanding of the world, how we respond to the world. It shapes our values, our character, our lifestyle. Worldview is everything. And so, you know, when we say, gosh, we are losing a biblical worldview, that essentially means that we're losing the heart and soul of a Christian nation.
So, George, we see this clear impact of the findings that our nation, if we don't change, we're headed down a very scary road. You know, I can think of some of these things you just talked about, you know, voting and legislating morality. If we think that we're just animals, you know, then why does, you know, abortion and pro-life, why do those things happen? So with no biblical worldview, we see that people won't be voting for righteous candidates. This legislating morality, it will become a morality, it will become an evil morality. Socialism is likely to increase, as it already is. You know, people just embracing Islam and saying, well, there's no difference between that religion and the religion of the Bible. But George, what do you see as the most likely impacts on our liberties, how will impact our freedom and even really God's blessings on our nation if the people in my generation and the generations behind us, if our young people don't start embracing a biblical worldview?
Well, you know, an easy way to encapsulate this is that basically what we've done is we've abandoned the American dream and we're embracing what might be called the new millennial dream. And, you know, that new millennial dream has a lot of components to it, but you know, the essence of it is that you just work enough to get by. You define for yourself what family is and who's part of family and what family can or cannot morally and justifiably do. You become someone who has a spiritual life, but you dictate the confines and the boundaries of that spirituality. You believe that you're entitled to freedom and rights, that you don't need to earn them. You don't need to support them. You just take them. It has a personalized moral code. It deals with situational truth. And so, you know, some of the practical implications for the nation are that, yes, we will continue to move towards socialism. And if you look at the millennials' love for people like Bernie Sanders and the kinds of policies that he was espousing, their love for Barack Obama and the kind of big government, big spending, government will take care of you mentality that we had for the prior 8 years, that's all part of it. I think what we're going to see is an unfiltered acceptance, unlimited acceptance almost, of all moral behaviors. We'll allow anything that doesn't physically hurt somebody else. We're going to see probably animals and the environment given what's akin to untouchable status, because we're going to elevate them to the same level as the Bible would elevate humans to. I think our economy is going to struggle because of the poor work ethic and because of the notion that the government will take care of everything. We're going to see that the media will continue to send biased, subjective messages and call it news, and people will increasingly accept that. We're going to see the persecution of Christians, the rejection of the Bible, and churches, Christian churches, are really going to struggle to attract people and to be able to impact their lives. It's going to be a radically different future.
George, let me ask you this. You made the comment that the three main influencers of a worldview are parents, media, and government. Obviously, the role that a parent should play in instilling into their child a biblical worldview should be given. It should be a given. It should be understood. Often it's not, tragically. But I want to talk about those latter two, media and government. I know we're going to talk about this a little more in the next segment, but could you share some very practical ways that the Church of Jesus Christ pastors can get involved in that highly influencing component called media and government to help turn the tide when it comes to inculcating a worldview via those two entities, media and government?
Sure. I mean, you know, let's start with media. There are several things that need to happen. One is that we cannot continue as Bible-believing Christians to watch programming, to go to movies, to buy books, to listen to radio stations that provide us material that is offensive to a biblical outlook. We cannot continue to buy the products that advertise on those channels and stations and theaters and whatnot. I mean, we've got to use whatever leverage we can bring to bear to change the culture. You know, one of the things that we need to do, for instance, is to be raising up our children to be journalists, to be people who will be in that media world, who will refuse to bow down and put out material that's offensive. People who are going to create media that provides truth in the perspectives that are given. Within our homes, with our kids, I mean, if they're going to be exposed to 16,000 hours of media over the course of their pre-adult years, what we've got to do is to carefully monitor the media that they're exposed to. We've got to mediate it, which means that we've got to talk to our kids about what they've been exposed to in the media so that they understand the difference between truth and a lie, so that they see when things are being manipulated, when somebody's trying to affect their worldview. And then we've got to also minimize the amount of media to which they're exposed. Right now, they've kind of got a blank check when it comes to exposure to media, and we have to take control of that. In terms of the legal situation, the law, civil law, I mean, that's an issue of governance. And the government is there to serve us. We have to be more aware of what's being done to us by the people that have been put in office, and we have to be willing to perhaps engage in civil disobedience when there are laws that are requiring us to offend God.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Stand in the Gap today. George Barna, our special guest, along with myself, Sam Rohr, Dave Kistler, and Isaac Crockett. When we come back in the next segment, we're going to continue on the solution phase of what do we do? What do we do? And continue on with what George is laying out here for us, the role of the home, the role of the pastor in the pulpit. What can we do to address the situation in America?
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful, full-color Founders Bible. In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the Founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold-embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of Providence, which established the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
Hi, this is Sandy Groff. Please join me this Sunday at 3 p.m. for the Luther 500 broadcast, a presentation of historic sermons from both Martin Luther and Dr. Walter A. Meyer of the Lutheran Hour. These sermons are being presented in honor of the 500th anniversary of the posting of the 95 Theses on October 31st, 1517 on the church door in Wittenberg, Germany. Listen and be blessed.
Here's Minute with the Master, brought to you by Bella Victor.
Today's question is, are you longing for God's favor in your life? My dear friend, are you down in the dumps thinking the whole world is against you? Are you wrestling with the thought the Lord has forgotten you? The truth is, if you are a child of God, God's favor is already there in your life. It happened when you became God's child through your faith in Jesus. As said in Ephesians 2:8, for by grace are ye saved through faith. Grace is God's unmerited and undeserved favor available for us through His Son Jesus. God's favor is not only in offering us salvation, but also for other aspects of our life. For this favor to manifest in all areas of your life, be it in your work or health or finances, you need to believe you are the favored one. Be bathed in this knowledge and walk in it. Your faith activates God's favor in your life.
This is A Liberating Truth, brought to you by Bella Victor. For more information, contact Bella at MinuteWithTheMaster.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap today.
As we continue on our discussion on biblical worldview, I'd like to take just a moment here and mention that how the American Pastors Network is very, very committed to identifying a biblical worldview and encouraging our pastors to preach it. And that's why we spend so much time on the program. And this subject today with George Barna is so critically important. Mena, you may have caught one of the announcements in that break of BJU Press and the importance of Christian education from a biblical worldview. George, you were talking about that in the other segment, that the biblical worldview, if in fact it is formed primarily between the ages of 8 and 13, certainly your academic curriculum has an awful lot to do with it. And I know that much curriculum out there, even a lot of Christian curriculum, does not embrace and actually build in a biblical worldview. So I'd encourage those who are listening today, listen to that, what's being done. And if you are a grandparent or a parent homeschooling your children or others, you take advantage of that. Look into the BJU Press curriculum because it does inculcate the values so desperately needed. As we wrap up the program right here, and George, you are already laying out some very specific things that could be done. I want you to close it today, but I would like to bring in Isaac here a little bit. As a millennial pastor, from an observational perspective here, Isaac, you've heard what George has been saying. You've seen it. You're right in that time of life. Can I ask you, as you interface with other millennial age pastors who are attempting to be faithful in the pulpit, what are you doing specifically to help address this need in your churches and in your community? What are you doing?
Yeah, I agree with all that George has put there. And as a pastor, having worked with children's ministries, even working as a substitute teacher in the public schools, I see this. And three of the things I thought of that we're doing, one is children's ministry. Ministering to children is a priority that in some of our churches gets overlooked and it's thought of as just babysitting. I mean, if a worldview starts being formed at 18 months, that means that in our toddler nurseries, we are seeing their worldview develop. I see children's ministry as frontline spiritual warfare, and in our churches, we need to be growing that and working with that. And I have people in my own church who often say, I wish the churches I grew up in, I wish that they had ministries like what we have for our children now when I was a kid, because I went to church, I was bored, I stopped going to church because I didn't understand anything. So I think we really have to reach children. And this even includes in our families, not only having our time of devotions and as George said, keeping the kids away from bad things, but even opening up our homes to our friends, the kids who are the friends of our children, and even adoption. My wife was adopted. Her dad was adopted. Her brother has adopted. Her grandmother on the other side of the family had, I think, 20-some foster children. So, you know, focusing on children. And then building community relationships. In George's book, What Americans Believe, George, this was published in 1991, I think, but one of the things I saw that I had highlighted in there was that you wrote, relationships outside of family ties are also of major importance to the majority of adults. And there's so many unchurched people in our communities that, George, I think you used the word de-church to refer to many of them. Many of them used to go to church. And we need to build relationships with them and talk to them about spiritual things. Don't hide your light under a bushel. Let people know you're a Christian and build a relationship where you can talk about that. And in my own, again, anecdotal experience, I see that inviting people to church, when you have that relationship, most of the time they'll come. Most of the time they'll talk about these things. And then kind of along that line, the third one is using our social media in a way to really shine our light, to teach a biblical worldview. And I've had people from our community who I didn't even know at all that have contacted me with questions like, what does the Bible say about homosexual marriages? What's the biblical perspective of immigration? What does the Bible teach about Allah? Is he really the same God as the God of the Bible? And I'll ask these people, I'll say, where did you find out that I would have the worldview on this? They say, oh, well, your church is known as the church that believes the Bible, as the church that will teach the Bible. And I think some of that comes from our Facebook page, that we put articles out there and links parts of sermons and videos and things, and we've had Sam come in and speak to us and to different civil leaders in our community,
and that we've become known through some of our social media as a church that has a biblical worldview. And so I think we can use that to our advantage to really shine our light out there in social media.
Isaac, absolutely great practical things. Thank you. George, probably a good setup for you. I want you to wrap this up here right now. You've heard what a millennial pastor is doing. I think it's fantastic. He referred to something that you wrote some years ago. You're having an impact. George, what can be in the next couple of minutes, what can be or should be the lead things, the priority positions that should be done from the pulpit and should be done in the pews, if you put it in that perspective? But lay that out there for us, practical sense. What can be done?
Yeah, you know, Sam, in past programs, we've talked about how God works in a culture. And one of the things that we've talked about is that he never waits until he has a majority to get his will done. Mm-hmm. He always uses a remnant. And when I look at the 10% who have a biblical worldview in America, I think that's the remnant that we've got to work with. And so my admonition to that remnant is, you know what, you can't put your faith in a closet and simply be proud of it. Look what I've figured out. Look what God's done to me. Look what he's given to me. He's blessed us so that we can be a blessing, the whole Genesis 12 principle. And so we need to recognize that if, for whatever reason, God has enabled us and led us to have a biblical worldview, we have a responsibility now to be warriors of the faith in a culture that is fighting to extinguish the flame of Christianity in America. And so we have to take that worldview into every niche, every community, every place that we can. Now, a bunch of us are grandparents, and we have to recognize, you know, maybe we have an opportunity to raise our grandchildren to have a biblical worldview. Maybe our kids won't do that job, you know, because the pressure against that within their own generation is so great. And so grandparents, even if it's not with your own grandchildren, maybe it's the friends of your grandchildren. You know, same kind of principle that Isaac was bringing up about the importance of opening up the home, the importance of relationships and getting out there. So I think that's key. A second thing I'd say is that churches have to reexamine what it is that they've been doing. I mean, let's just be brutally honest for a minute. If we're in a situation where the church has had opportunity after opportunity for a couple of centuries to raise up people who have a biblical worldview and we're at 10%, we have to question whatever strategies and tactics we've been using to try to get a biblical worldview into people's minds and hearts. Our job is to evangelize and to equip and to encourage. We've got to do these things, but we can't keep doing the same things that aren't working and expecting that suddenly it's going to click into place. We need to be more creative, more strategic. And so I'd say, yeah, the most important thing I think Isaac brought up is looking at our children and as the primary mission field of the church. Not just children in our own homes, children in the entire culture. And so we have to be investing the bulk of our resources in children. I study churches. I know that most of the typical church's budget goes into adults. We can't continue to do that and make a difference. Let me just finish by saying we didn't get into the situation we're in overnight. This is going to be a multi-generation turnaround process. So each of us who loves Christ and loves America has to recognize this is a long-term battle. You better settle in for the long haul.
George and Isaac and Dave, great material today. Ladies and gentlemen, go to our website, standinthegapradio.com. You can hear an archive of this program. Unless you were writing notes down, there's a whole lot too much to remember. Go back, re-listen to the program. You can also look up George Barna at American Culture and Faith Institute. See you tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
Broadcasting live from historic West Norriton Township, this is AM 1180. AM 1180. WFYL.